could I make it?
The most exciting thing you can start a show with.
Coming live from the 2SER studios.
This is a great show.
Across the park, 2SER.
And just go for a swim, but like deep.
Come on in, meatball.
Testicles. Pointy at the doggy.
Gummy ball.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, no worries, I have good footy.
Which part of that was
good? I've got a real problem with that.
Bloody.
Never walk alone.
I can stand the prick.
Oh, bloody bird.
Let's not do this.
Oh, the corner injury. You got a corner injury.
Hello and welcome to Across the Park, a sports show on 2SER that sometimes has a guest and sometimes doesn't. But today is one of those days where it sometimes does. But before we get into that, my football name is Joel Kasem and I'll be your striker tonight. Also on the pitch are the following people. First up, it's our goalie, it's Mick Rad.
Yeah, baby, always saving the balls from hitting the nets and the goals and out too fast because I know I'd like to rush out and drop balls at halfway and then get chipped and then the ball goes in the net and then I'm stuffed it up. So don't put me in goals, really, actually. It's a bad idea.
Excellent. Never again. Also, here is our sweeper. It's Rowan Fitzpatrick.
I need like a sweeping, like a broom sweeping sound effect.
Well, usually Rowan's cleaning up after us and all the crap that we make and the mess that we make. So it's suitable that he's a sweeper.
The skills translate.
It works on so many levels, about two, I think. Okay. As I said in the intro, we have a big guest coming up later on in the show. So we're actually not going to faff about. Faff is a word, right?
Yeah.
P-F-A-F-F. That's an old sewing machine. There you go.
All right.
The P is silent, but the machine isn't. All right, that's not my joke. I can't take that. So let's just get straight into sport. We're in, like I said, we've got a guest coming up, but we also are in the middle of the AFL Grand Final last weekend, the NRL Grand Final coming up this weekend. Let's super quickly discuss these. We'll start with AFL. After 57 long years, the Melbourne Demons are the AFL Premiers.
Woo! Get it right. The Melbourne Demons, how they win? That can't be right. This is an error. Oh, they did win. I was impressed. What a game, hey. Like, best AFL Grand Final I've seen in years, except the scoreline was a blowout, but it just, the way it swung back and forward.
Yeah, well, you look at the score of 140-66. If you hadn't watched the game, you're like, well, that must have been boring. But actually, for most of it, at least the first half and a little bit of the third quarter, it was so tight. So tight, in fact, that the Dogs finished at halftime leading and then sort of fell apart after that. I think they were on 59 and then finished with 66. So not much of a third and fourth quarter from them. But still, it was such a good game. And like you said, it just the ups and downs and the possessions, that like one team had so much possession and the other team had the possession and then it's where the goals were coming in. And it was really a really cool grand final.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy it. I'm not a massive, massive Aussie Rules fan, even though I co-host a sports show. But it just seems to me that a lot of AFL grand finals in past years have been pretty disappointing, you know, sort of one-sided affairs. The Tigers were thrashing people. It was sort of like, meh. But the fact that you just didn't really know what was going to happen until, that second half of the third quarter, it was and then just to see them blow them out of the park, like it was just – pretty awesome display from the Demons in the end, just to sort of really just put their foot down and say, well, all right, we've got this. This is ours. And they wanted it.
Yeah.
Don't normally see like a blowout at the end, like especially like a high intensity game like that when it was Demons came out and then the Dogs did and it just went back and forth. And then just, as you said, just hit that gear and just went bang. Like usually it's tight the entire way through.
Yeah. It became such a blowout. 60,000 fans in Perth. Got to enjoy it. First time it was ever played in Perth. Second time out of Melbourne, of course.
That stadium is bloody awesome, by the way. I've been outside it. And
Very close.
I haven't been inside it yet, but I've been outside.
I've seen pictures on the internet.
Looks awesome. It looks like it's a really cool stadium. And it's one of those stadiums that doesn't try to be too big, you know, like
it doesn't
You know, some stadiums, 80,000, 100,000, like they're just a little bit too big and a little bit too echoey and whatever. But Optus Stadium, I feel like it's just 60,000 people and there will just be epic. So, yeah, good on Perth for doing it. Probably the last time I'll ever host an AFL Grand Final. But, you know, it did well.
NRL, the grand final will be this weekend, of course. It's been 7 years since two Sydney teams have faced off in a grand final. So nice for Sydney, although it's being played out of Sydney.
Up in Queensland.
And crushing. Not even 1,000% sure where it's being played. Most likely Suncorp to about 75% of the people that bought tickets. But if not, it will, of course, be played in Townsville. South Sydney Rabbitohs, Penrith Panthers, both teams who, I mean, they've been fantastic all season, which kills me to say, but they both have. But last weekend, Penrith stood up against the minor premiers, last year's grand finalists, the Melbourne Storm, beat them by, what, it was the closest game, 10-6 or something?
Yeah, that was such a tight game. It was epic.
Yeah, and just absolute sweet revenge for Panthers, who, of course, lost the grand final last year, making it 2 years in a row now, which is exciting for them. Souths were just far too powerful for Manly.
I couldn't believe Manly just capitulated like that, to be honest. Like, I thought Manly were going to make the final for sure. But, yeah, the Rabbitohs really just proved that they are as good as, you know, that they can win it. Like, I didn't expect the Rabbitohs to even get this far in the finals, but they've really proved they can do it.
No, so, one did.
Yeah, I'm winning, impressed with them.
Beating Panthers in the first round of the finals absolutely was, like, the biggest thing for them.
Mm.
It made their journey so much easier. Yeah, so Manly were actually stuck in traffic prior to the game. We're late to the game. They had to make the game a bit later, and some would argue they stayed on that bus for the first half because South went out to a 22-0 lead and then end up just thrashing them in the end. So, yeah, it's going to be a very tight grand final, I think.
You think so? It's quite – because they went on different paths. Obviously, South got up on Panthers, which was a big game, but then they had the week off. And then, you know, they came out and just blew Manly off the park. Whereas, you know, the Penrith, they've taken the long route. They had a very hard-fought game against the Eels. They've had another hard-fought game against Storm. You know, it's going to be, are they going to be too battle-hardened? Is that going to be a good thing or a bad thing? Or if, you know, has South kind of had a bit of an easier run? So it's going to kind of be interesting to see, you know, how each team like show up on the grand final.
Who's going to win, boys?
Well, before we do the who's going to win, I'll give you some, I mean, I'm sure there's some South fans that listen to this show. I'm sure there's some Panthers fans that also listen to this show. I'm going to give you some facts that you can take to the bank so your team can win, okay? For South, they have a total of 2,153 games between them. So of the previous 18 teams to go to the grand final with more than 2,000 games experience, 13 of them have won and 5 have lost. Yeah. And but 3 of those losing teams also lost to teams with over 2,000 plus games between them. So basically what I'm saying is it's a good stat for them.
For the bunnies.
That's for the bunnies. For the Panthers, however,
yes.
Nathan Cleary and Jerome Luai, who are, of course, the halves pairing, they have partnered each other 56 times in the halves since their first game together in even back in, what do they call, under 20s, whatever they call that now, in 2015. So 56 times they've played together.
Or whatever, yeah.
They've won 52 of those games, which is 93%. And this season, they've won 20 of 21 games together, including Origin 1 and 2.
Wow.
That is a pretty killer stat, isn't it?
Okay, so who wins?
But you know what?
Yes.
I don't know. Stats, in the end of the day, numbers like that, all very pretty and whatnot. But if you're looking on form and you're looking on who's just playing, who wants it more? I reckon the Rabbitohs want this bad. And I'm picking the Rabbitohs to not dominate. I think it'll be fairly close, but I'll pick Bunnies, maybe 24-16.
Yeah, it is the fairy tale potential for Souths with Adam Reynolds leaving and Benji, you know, how many years since Benji. 2005 back in another GF and
16 years. Wayne,
yeah, 16 years. Yeah, there's got to be a massive bet on for a Benji flick pass in this, but I think going off just the determination that Penrith had last week to that those defensive efforts to keep Storm, I think they're a good chance.
I'll just sit here and pick my nose.
Faber Writing Academy is the writing school inside Australia's leading independent publisher. Allen and Unwin partnered with the prestigious publisher Faber and Faber in the UK. Faber Writing's diverse range of courses are run by working novelists and publishing experts. If you're writing a novel, non-fiction, or just starting out as a writer, visit faberwritingacademy.com.au to find out more. Faber Writing Academy sponsors 2SER.
You're going to see it's the place to be.
2SER Radiothon. This must be the place. October 11 to 24.
You're going to see it's the place to be.
A classic. This place is going to swing tonight.
Hey, guys. Now we welcome a very special guest. He's worked for SBS, Fox Sports, Optus Sport, and he's now heading up the commentary team as part of football's new home at Channel 10. It's the undeniable voice of football, Simon Hill.
How are you guys? Nice to be with you.
Thank you for joining us, Simon. This is very exciting. It's very exciting for Rowan. I know he's quite a football fan. Yes, he's been a little bit nervous this week. I'm sorry, Rowan. Throwing under the bus straight away, mate.
That's no need to be nervous, Rowan. No need to be nervous. We're all human beings. We're all friends here.
Normally we have Gabby on the show, but we politely asked her not to come on. So Rowan could ask them. No, that's a joke. That's a joke. That's not true at all. So thank you for joining us. This is actually a very exciting time in football, especially in Australia. We actually had some breaking news. Is that right, Rowan?
Yeah, well, this week we've got the announcement of the logo and also the new A-Leagues, as in bringing all the leagues together. And I know, Simon, you're very heavily involved in the A-League. So we wanted to get your take on what this actually means for the Australian football landscape, this rebrand.
Look, I think it's a positive move because it aligns both the men's and the women's game under the same umbrella. That's not just about equality, although that's important as well. But I think as a branding exercise, it will probably help commercially as well in sort of stopping the division between the men and the women. Not that there were physical divisions, but, you know, in terms of branding, it makes it clearer, I think. I know change is always difficult for some people, and, you know, I've read some of the commentary that says it's confusing, and we've lost 13 years of the W League, which is true. And, you know, I'm a big one for football history, so it's sad to lose that. But I think, you know, you have to move with the times, and I think overall this is a move that was a no-brainer probably in the current climate. I think if all the football codes were starting tomorrow, setting up their professional leagues, this is what they'd do. So, you know, this is the benefit in some ways of having leagues that are relatively young. You can move things around a bit and be a bit more flexible. So, look, it's a start of a long journey. This is not the beginning and end of the changes. There's a lot more to come, but I think it's a smart beginning, and obviously the logo as well. And, you know, I know that's divided opinion too.
Oh, I wanted to ask about that.
They always do. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's just a logo. It's just bringing it into the modern age. It's, you know, you like it or you don't.
I've heard people compare it to Pong, you know, like a bat and a ball. And Pong.
Yeah.
The original football.
And I've seen that, wasn't it the Adelaide Building Company or had the same look? Hopefully you haven't got the copyright on it. Anyway, look, a logo is a logo. I'm not going to get too hung up on all that, but as I say, I think it's the start of what is going to be a lot of changes that you're going to see across football and the professional competitions over the next few weeks and months.
Well, it's very exciting times. Where do you kind of see this going with the growth of the A-Leagues now?
Well, again, I hope that's just the start. Obviously, MacArthur have been in for a year. Western United have been in for two. Both have got a bit of work to do, to be brutally honest. You know, Western United, as we know, playing in so many different places at the moment. They really need to get that stadium built, or at least started. So that's the first thing. MacArthur have got a bit of work to do with their local community as well in terms of getting more fans through the gate, but it does take time. I hope that's not where the A-League finishes with 12 clubs. I mean, you know, in the next few years, we want to be getting up to 14 and maybe even 16 if that is the end game. And I want to see a national second division. I've been very vocal about that, to connect all the tiers on a week-by-week basis in the same way that we see you know, a few times a year in the FFA Cup. I think that's hugely important because, you know, despite the popular narrative, we are the biggest game in the country in terms of participation. But we haven't yet connected all the different moving parts of the game together. And I think a second division and a proper football pyramid would be one way to do that and stop, you know, a lot of the infighting, which is stymied our growth for way too long, in my opinion. But look, you know, those are long-term goals. In the short term, obviously, we've got a new broadcast deal, which I'm, you know, a part of with Channel 10 and Paramount Plus, which is good because it gives the game short-term security. It's a five-year deal. The Socceroos and the Matildas and all the Asian competitions are going to be on that platform as well. So it's a good offering for, you know, fans at home, competitive pricing. And the A-League clubs, and I'm talking about both the men and women now, of course, they're in control. And the onus is on them to restore the professional competitions back to health. Because, again, being brutally honest, we've fallen away over the last 3 or 4 years for various reasons. A lot of politics in the game. You know, we came to the end of the last broadcast deal, which, you know, Fox did a fantastic job for the game for so many years. I worked there for years and years. But it was quite clear that, you know, we were coming towards the end of that era. So in many ways, it's a fresh start for the game, a chance for new ideas, a chance to relaunch the game, if you like. And, you know, what we were just talking about, the rebrand is just the first peg in the hole, I guess. But there's a lot more to do. There will be no silver bullet to restoring the game to health. It'll take time. But we've got to start off on the journey. And, you know, hopefully we're going to do that over the next few weeks.
If you, you know, we're talking about expansion and getting a few more teams, where would you like to see some teams come from? Like, are there other cities? Sorry, Mickey Postal, on your question. Are there other cities that aren't yet involved that you would like to see?
Canberra.
Well, of course. I mean, Canberra would be one. You know, Wollongong would be another. I think we need a second team in Queensland. I'd love to see us have a team in Tasmania. And maybe as an outside, if we continue to have Wellington Phoenix in the competition, which obviously we are, then, you know, why not a team from Auckland, which has a population of well over a million? So there are places where we can go to, but I think it needs to be more done in a more strategic way than it's been done in the past. And that's not to be critical of, you know, the expansion that went into Melbourne with Western United or in Sydney with MacArthur FC. But I think, you know, the process was rather ad hoc. And I'd love to know what happened to the other 13, 14 bidders that were in the race for that. I mean, did Football Australia just wave them off at the door and say, well, thanks for coming, but we didn't choose you? Or did they remain in dialogue with those people and say, look, you know, there might be a second division coming, or we're going to expand again in a couple of years' time. Keep your powder dry. Let's keep talking. That's, you know, that speaks of a longer-term plan to grow the game. And I think that's something we haven't really had. We've been so busy trying to survive and find short-term fixes that we haven't really had the vision to be able to plan long-term. We've got to start doing that. You know, we look at some of our nearest competitors, and I'm talking about Japan in particular here. And I know they're a different country with different sporting interests, bigger population, probably bigger business investment, but they have a 100-year plan. And they're 15 years into that. They started off their J-League in 1993 with 10 clubs, which is roughly the size of our A-League. And, you know, 20-odd years later, they're up to 53 professional clubs across three divisions. Wow. That's a long-term plan. And they've made it happen because they've been coordinated, they've been unified. Obviously, they've had the money as well, which is a big problem in this country, but they've got it done. And we really have just been, you know, groping around trying to find short-term fixes. So we've got to be more strategic when we're planning for the future. But the good thing about the game in Australia is that we have so much blue sky ahead of us. We've only really just begun to scratch the surface of this game's potential in this country. We have got so much more growth than any of the other professional sports, and that's a bonus. But we've got to realise it.
Yeah. I'd love to jump into your career and your commentary in particular, because you called one of my favourite moments in sport ever. And I want to know if it's one of your favourites as well, because, of course, we're talking about 2005, Australia versus Uruguay, Stadium Australia. I was there in the corner, and that moment when Alvisi kicked the penalty, I was hugging strangers. No worries, just hugging, kissing everybody around me. The moment was magical, and your voice is forever locked into that moment as well because of how you called it. What do you think back when you think back to that moment and that time? Is that one of your favorite commentary?
In a word, Mick, no. It's not. And I've explained this on quite a few occasions in the past, not because the moment wasn't brilliant, and it's great that it's been remembered in that way, but professionally, that night wasn't very good. That's okay. The brutal truth. And again, I've explained this. There are many reasons for it. One of the reasons was I'd been in Montevideo 4 days prior, and I was jet-lagged, I was tired. Obviously, it was a very emotional occasion. We went all the way through 90 minutes extra time and then penalties. So my focus was difficult to maintain, but I also had Craig Foster next to me, who was we've laughed and joked about this, so I'm not telling any tales out of school. He was so emotionally invested in the outcome that he really wasn't much help to me that night, to be honest. He was just yelping things into the microphone, which made my job professionally very, very difficult. And, you know, I remember coming away from the stadium, and of course I was delighted that Australia qualified, but professionally, I remember walking away from the stadium thinking, that was awful. We're going to get smashed for that tomorrow. Now, we didn't. And this, I've always said this, this is a good lesson for commentators. It's not about us. It's about what happens on the pitch. And people remember that in such a positive way because Australia won. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
So our commentary, as bad as it was, and let me tell you professionally, it was bad, has been remembered in a really nice and positive way because of the outcome, which is terrific for me and Fozzie, and for SBS, who covered it and did a great job, obviously, throughout the years for the game. But if you ask me, is that my favourite commentary? Not even in the top 30. It was awful. It was dreadful.
Well, then,
The one at the World Cup against Japan, you know, the nation's first ever win at the World Cup finals. Yeah, I remember that one a lot more fondly because professionally I was much more pleased with that one. But, yeah, that night, November 2005, But I'm glad it was remembered in a nice way.
Always.
Yeah, I think it will be. All right, so then what are some favourite moments? You've been commentating for a while now.
Yeah, hence the grey hair.
You're looking fantastic, Simon. And the beard.
Thank you very much.
I think the three of us are jealous of that beard. That's
yeah. It was a lot longer. It was a lot longer back in the day, but I got so much grief for it. I've had to trim it. Highlights. Look, there's 100 of them. Obviously, the Japan game that I mentioned. In fact, that entire World Cup experience in 2006 was terrific. Other games like the 2015 Asian Cup final, grand finals I've had the privilege of calling, going back earlier in my career. And, you know, a lot of people in Australia don't think I had a career before I came here, but I did. So there are lots of big games that I did when I was still living and working in the UK, such as the FA Cup final in 1996. I called the European Championship final that year as well for BBC World Service. I called the African Cup of Nations in a country called Burkina Faso in 1998, which was just probably one of the best life experiences I've ever had. So lots and lots of games down the years. And you know, some matches that are not necessarily memorable because they were important games or even, you know, great commentaries. But I remember them because they were great life experiences, such as traveling to Uruguay for the first leg, going to places like Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan and Lebanon and Vietnam for World Cup qualifiers or Asian Cup ties. You know, football is the brilliant vehicle to experience life in a very different way. And I've been, you know, the luckiest guy in the world because I've been able to travel and combine two of my great loves, which is finding out about other cultures whilst also being paid to call a game that I love. So, you know, if you combine, for example, in 2012, we went to Lebanon and, you know, called a friendly over there, which was a terrific experience. But also, you know, got to see a fascinating part of the world that was going through a very tumultuous period because the Syrian war was right on its doorstep. And in the same trip, we then crossed over to Jordan for the World Cup qualifier and went to see the ancient wonders of Petra, which is, you know, one of the seven wonders of the world. So that to me is something that sticks in my head, not necessarily just because of the football, but because football was the vehicle to allow me to, you know, experience that. So I think there's an awful lot of memories. People tend to think you just go, oh, that World Cup qualifier, because that's what they remember. And that's perfectly understandable because that's the football. That was the bit that was on TV. But for us, it's about the whole package, yeah, the whole experience.
There you go, kids. Be a commentator.
Yeah, best job in the world. Best job in the world, let me tell you.
Okay, so you mentioned there that you started in UK. Of course, that's where you're from. How did you get started? Yeah. Why commentating? Why commentary?
Well, to be honest, I never wanted to be a commentator per se. I wanted to be a written journalist, which is what I trained to do. After I left university, which was 1990, back in the days of black and white, I did a postgrad training course in written journalism, and that was my plan. Really, was to write for, you know, initially a local newspaper, and then hopefully move up to the, you know, the Guardian or the Daily Mirror or something like that. Being a bit of a lefty, obviously, those are the papers I read. And instead, when I graduated in 1991, the UK was going through a pretty horrible recession, and there were just no jobs in written journalism. I did apply for quite a few. And sort of in desperation, I applied for a job that looked something similar to journalism, which was a role in commercial production, basically writing adverts for radio. And this was for a local station in South Wales called Red Dragon FM. And they wrote back to me and said, look, we don't think you're quite suitable for that role, but we see that you've got some brief experience in written journalism, which I had. I'd done some, you know, match reports whilst I was a student. So they invited me down for an interview and said, look, there's a job here as a sports reporter going, if you're interested in that. So, of course, that's what I wanted to do. So I said, yeah. So I'd never even thought about radio or television, but that's where my sort of career started and diverged almost before it began into something different, which was broadcasting. So I did that for a couple of years, and then I moved to the BBC to work for BBC Radio Lancashire. And it was a couple of weeks before the start of the new Premier League season in 1993. And my boss said, Saturday sports show I'll host, and you can go and do commentary, Chelsea and Blackburn. And I said, okay, well, you know, I've never done commentary before. And he said, well, let's find out if you can do it. So that was my first game, Chelsea Blackburn at Stamford Bridge. And I've been doing it ever since. So I must have done all right.
What a great story.
Incredible.
I love it. And, of course, big year run for Man U that year. You're a Man City fan, though, is that right?
I am a Manchester City fan, yes. From Manchester, which is why I'm a City fan. Again, you know, there's a long family story behind it. So my dad, who's now 87, has been a City fan all his life, and my granddad was all his life, no longer with us, obviously. And my great-granddad played for them in the 1890s when they were Ardwick FC. So this is the family heirloom that is handed down from generation to generation. So, yeah, that's why I'm a blue.
Very nice.
Looking forward, so the A-League we know starts at the end of October. But we also have
November now, actually.
Oh, has it moved?
Mid-November. Yeah.
Okay. You've come to the right show. We know nothing. So you're doing that for us. But the Matildas are going to play a few friendlies here, which is exciting. I think they've got Brazil.
Yep.
And is USA confirmed? Where are
I'm not sure about that yet, but I know they've got a couple of games against Brazil, 23rd and 26th of October. Yeah. And they're going to be in Australia as well, which is great. Be nice to actually get out to a football stadium. I forgot what one looks like, to be honest. So, yeah, it'd be great to have the girls, you know, back on home soil. Obviously, they did a great job in Tokyo, fell just short of the medal positions. But, you know, hopefully they're still a team on the rise. We've got the Women's World Cup in a couple of years' time. I think Tony Gustafsson has got a bit to do, to be fair, on the strength of the performance against Ireland. He's got to find some solutions to the defensive issues. So this is as good a place to start as any against Brazil.
Yeah.
I'll wait for that Women's World Cup in a couple of years. It's going to be fantastic having a World Cup in this country, which I think will maybe will lead to the men's one day as well. Never know.
Yeah. I think I'll be pushing up the daisies before that happens, and I think you three might as well.
And the Socceroos continuing to, well, they're going great. I mean,
you're going to elaborate on that?
Go on, Joel, you started.
Yeah, no. They're going okay. Look, they breezed through the first stage of qualifying for the World Cup. Obviously, now they're in the, you know, the more difficult parts, which is the final stage. But they made a terrific start. They blew China away. The game against Vietnam was trickier, but I thought that was going to be the case because of the conditions. Which were hot and humid as they always are in Vietnam. But they got those out of the way, 6 points out of six. They're a tougher test to come. Obviously, they've got Japan, which is on the 12th of October. Before that, they play Oman. They were hoping to have that game in Australia, but that's not going to happen. It's just a little bit too early, unfortunately, with us still being in, you know, mostly in lockdown due to the pandemic. But I'm hopeful that in November, we'll have that home game that is scheduled actually in Australia, which will be great.
Yeah, for sure. And they're playing a Qatar, that Oman game, which I guess is, warming up. In the
bit of a warm-up, yeah.
Yeah, it's a warm-up. And also, you know, they played the China game there before in similar sort of conditions, so they'll be, you know, familiar with that. And I think Graham Arnold has said he wants to sort of make that, if it has to be at their home venue, they'll make that their home away from home. So, look, you know, I think they'll be okay. Obviously, it'll be a, you know, shorter trip for Oman, who are a decent side. They beat Japan away from home, so, you know, they're going to be no mugs. But if they can get that win on the board, then that's three from three. Gives them a bit of a buffer before the trip to Japan 5 days later, which is going to be obviously, you know, really tough. That's the toughest game in the group, as it always is.
Oh, looking forward to it.
What about away from football, Simon? What do you like to do?
Well, I'm a big music buff, massively into heavy metal, always have been. And I've always played the drums since I was a kid. Badgered the life out of my parents when I was about 10 or 11 to buy me a drum kit. They didn't want to because they thought it was a passing phase, and I don't think they wanted the noise either. But eventually they relented, and yeah, I've played drums ever since. So I play in a heavy metal cover band here in Sydney called Green Manalishi. Obviously, we're not playing at the moment because of lockdown, but yeah, we play the new wave of British heavy metal covers such as Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath and Motorhead, Judas Priest, all that sort of stuff. And we love it.
Amazing.
We rock, dude.
I'd love to see you play. That'd be so good.
It's great fun. It's a great distraction away from football. I love it. And you know, there was a little period when I was a teenager where I thought, well, maybe I could be good enough to be a professional. But yeah, football won.
I mean, you could always just take the drums into a common into the booth, and
every time there's a goal, just a drum solo.
Yeah, unfortunately, they take about half an hour to set up. That's the problem. So
at least you can have if there's a penalty shootout, you can have the snare and just do a drum roll every time they run up to take a shot.
That's true, and a big cymbal crash when they miss.
A nice big gong at the end of a game.
Yeah. Yes, that, like one of my heroes, John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, is one of my favorite drummers.
All right, so we've got the A-League season about to kick off. A-League's season is about to kick off. Simon, who are our teams to look out for in our divisions?
Well, look, I'm not going to make a prediction as to who's going to win it because that will follow me around for the rest of the season. I'll get dog's abuse from all the supporters. What I will say is this. I think the big improvers this season in the A-League men's and A-League women's, in the men's, will be Melbourne Victory. Let's be honest, they can't be much worse than they were last year. And Tony Popovic won't stand for that sort of result. So he's already acquired a lot of new players. I think they will be much, much better. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but I think they'll be in the finals. So that's my prediction for the men's. And similarly for the women's, last year Melbourne City had a very poor year by their very lofty standards. And again, they won't accept that. So I think they'll be back this year. So that's my tip. Victory will be better in the men's and City will be better in the women's.
Fair enough.
There you go.
And Sydney FC will win.
Well, I'm sure you're hoping that's the case. Yeah.
All right, Simon, before we finish, we always end the show with a bit of a game. And like football, this is actually going to be quite a low-scoring game because I've only got the one question. So,
right.
Not too bad.
It's going to be a one-niller or a nil-niller.
I don't do much prep. The first W League Grand Final was won by who?
First W League Grand Final would be, and we're talking the modern era, not the WNSL, that would have been... Yeah, 2008, we're talking.
I think so.
Yeah. See, I've got you wondering.
You've got the answer, haven't you, Joel? Well,
I would say that would be Brisbane Roar.
Yes. I think they were called Queensland Roar then, but yeah, that's it.
Brisbane, Queensland Roar.
Well done. That was too easy. Did the other boys know? Rowan?
Mick? No. I was going to get Canberra, but that wasn't Canberra.
Come on, lads. You've got to be better than that.
Yeah.
Simon Hill, thank you so much for joining us here on Across the Park. You can be heard shortly when the A-Leagues start on Channel 10 and Paramount Plus. Thank you so much. And also thank you to me for not saying soccer once this whole episode.
You just did. You just ruined it. Thanks,
all
for having
the best
me, boys.
And
thank you, Simon.
Should there be a some noise there?
Super Bowl Sunday 2020. I did not feel well leaving the hotel. Said a long goodbye to a big dollar bill. See you working at the reading of the will. Sherwood Forest, Ranger retired.
coming in hot, right off the top. I may as well crash into you. You are the best supporting actor, but just be what you want, believe it or not. That is all I ask of you. And if you leave, well, I guess I'm leaving too. Academy Award goes to. Stand by my man, if he needs a right hand, we may as well have surgery. I am the best supporting actor, but I'll give you the space, my kiss your face, if that is what you want from me.
CR 107.3.
Wow. This place is really nice.
2SER Radiothon, October 11 to 24.
This must be the place.
We're going to the place where all the action is.
Microchip.
to keep me up at night.
You're listening to 2SER 107.3, FM, DAB, on demand, live stream, and app.
One of these days, and it won't be long. wanna be at my name.